Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, stand by for the furniture guys, but first, we've seen the commercials before, topical serums that claim to improve the appearance of our skin. Dark spot treatments, for example, that are supposed to make us look better, but they take 6 months or more to actually see results, and most of the time, we can't see any difference even after all of that time and sacrifice. Now imagine a topical solution for eliminating fine lines, wrinkles, and large under-eye bags in just a matter of minutes. I'm not talking about some risky, expensive plastic surgery. I'm talking about gone in minutes. It's called Plexiderm, a clinically studied serum that visibly eliminates your wrinkles, crow's feet, and under-eye bags in just a matter of minutes. It's the edge you've been looking for. You know, when Plexiderm asked me to test drive their topical serum, I jumped at the chance to see if it really works. I wanted to take the test, and man, oh man, did it. In just about 10 minutes, the fine lines around my 48-year-old eyes were gone, disappeared, vanished. Plexiderm can give you the confidence you'll need to be yourself at work or out with friends. And the best part is Plexiderm lasts for hours and goes on clear, so nobody's going to know you're using it. As Stephanie Miller calls it, Photoshop for your face. Go to triplexiderm.com and use my code VOICES for 50% off a full-size bottle of Plexiderm, plus an additional $10 off. That's right, 50% off, plus an extra $10 off. You can also get this offer by calling 1-800-685-1292 and mentioning the code VOICES. Plexiderm is backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit triplexiderm.com today. Use the code VOICES at checkout. That's triplexiderm.com, code VOICES. And now, let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Zeska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, March 11, 2020, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Zeska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Today, I get to talk with two of the funniest living human beings on the planet, Joe Lorario and Ed Feldman, collectively known as the Furniture Guys. You might remember their hit DIY shows Furniture on the Men on PBS, Furniture to Go on TLC, and they're currently hosting an internet show called The Old Furniture Guys. Simply put, every version of their show is informative, endlessly hilarious, and yes, subversive as hell. TheFurnitureGuys.tv is the website. You can also find all of their old shows on the YouTube. Okay, hang on to your cambric or dust cover. Here come Ed Feldman and Joe Lorario, the Furniture Guys.
Yeah, are we on a delay or can I say anything I fucking want?
You can say whatever the fuck you want. Feel free to let the obscenities fly.
That means I won't get any fucking word in.
You know what?
So that's okay. I got work to do here. He's at the shop with me.
You know what? I'm an Ed virgin, but I've interviewed Joe before when I was doing a radio show in Reading, Pennsylvania back in 1995. And no,
I remember that.
Oh, you don't. I was just about to say.
My aunts used to live in Reading and I was probably there something. I don't remember what.
Yeah. That's
I think
right.
It's pronounced Reading though. My mother was from Reading. Yeah.
Well, I remember that because I it was way before email or any of that crap. So I actually like cold called you at your house. I don't know how the hell I found your number, Joe, but I did. And I was like, oh my God, I've actually got Joe Lorario on my phone.
You called me in Philadelphia.
Yeah. And I think I think I kept you on for like 2 hours or something, just absolutely asinine and ridiculous. So thank you retroactively
for welcome.
Taking all that time.
Could you send me a transcript of that?
Yeah, sure. 10 cents to Merkle Press.
Oh, and a warning to both of you in case you want to bail out now. I wrote an article yesterday for Salon.com, and it really pissed off the Trump people. So you might get some blood spatter on you just by the very fact that you're on the show today. But somehow I think Ed is actually going to enjoy the sport of it in case that actually happens.
That's okay.
Well,
okay.
All I can say is that he's a traitor and the remedy for treason is hanging, and I can't get any more succinct than that.
Yeah.
Well, we shoot him, then we hang him. He's a big adventure.
And yeah, the best way I could describe Ed's political presence on social media, on Facebook in particular, is this. No fucks left. Joe, are you more or less in agreement with Ed generally, or where do you land on all of this?
I don't speak politics.
Except, you know, you keep saying that, but you're always, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't post. I don't get up on a soapbox to post about it. I laugh at it. I
well,
think
that's
Trump
because
is insane. I think he deserves to be put in prison with all his family.
Right.
To be put in prison with him. But
see, I don't agree. I don't agree.
Why? Okay.
Because they are the Romanovs, and that is the remedy. In the basement. And the children, too. I'm sorry. It's just got to be. It's a Romanoff remedy I'm calling for.
Yeah.
Didn't I just say
that? But it's all satire, Bob.
You know the end of the movie Boogie Nights, where the colonel ends up in prison after child molestation charges? That's what I'm envisioning for Trump. Maybe in the cell right next to Harvey Weinstein.
You're the only guy who can talk about the end of Boogie Nights and not think about Marky Mark's giant cock.
Well, that was second on the list. That was just...
What are you, on the saltpeter, dude? The end of Boogie Nights is you finally see Marky Mark's giant cock.
Change the subject, Bob, or he'll tell you the whole movie.
See, that's what I'm looking for. Hey, why don't we'll just spend the next hour talking about Boogie Nights.
Now I'm just thinking about Heather Graham, and I'm in a happy place.
Okay, you know what? Let's talk about television back in the relative peace and prosperity of the 1990s. Obviously, your first show together was Furniture on the Mend on PBS in Philadelphia. Talk about how exactly you both got together, first of all.
I got to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. I'm
Joe
sure.
Joe was walking down the street, and he had to go to the bathroom. I had a milk bottle.
I'll tell you what. We'll do our act we used to do in front of throngs of people, which started, "Hi, I'm Joe Lorario."
I'm Ed Feldman. We're the Furniture Guys.
Let me tell you, Bob, we used to do that for 12 years on the road, do the same shtick, and you know, it was always a new audience.
I mean, that's
always in some town on the worst time of the year for that town, because when you have a home show, you never want it to compete with anything, because if it does, it loses. It's a home show.
Right.
So in Milwaukee, they were in February, and in Dallas, they were in July. People would just go inside so as not to be buffeted by the weather. And that was our audience. They were literally captive audiences.
Right. So before you actually did a show, you were kind of doing the show on stage for 10, 12 years.
No.
We
did because of the show, we would get hired to do personal appearances at home shows where we would sell our books and our T-shirts and things like that.
Well,
and
we
would be the main draw to bring people in.
Oh, I see. So
in a way, Joe, we were doing personal appearances before the TV show. We were just doing them on the construction sites that we were working on.
Okay, there you go.
Because that's how the act began.
Right.
We would be working on a construction site, and we would do what we constantly do in private and in public when we're together now and then and forever.
So how did you end up landing on furniture as the centerpiece or as the topic of the show?
Most people think we were not just actors playing a part. We actually did do furniture. I mean, I'm in a shop now where I'm building some stuff. I'm building a bar. It was a matter of just doing what we knew while we were being funny.
I had a business where I fixed people's furniture in their homes under warranty from furniture stores.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
So Joe did old furniture. I did new furniture. I did more upholstery than he did. He did a lot of refinishing. Mm-hmm. So we figured we sit together, and the banter worked. So we pitched it to the PBS station in Philadelphia, and they picked it up for 6 shows and then 7. And then we waited for them to get more money, which they never did. And then the Learning Channel, now known as TLC, called. And that was when TLC actually had how-to shows. Now, right. I don't even know, are they still doing the I'm the 98,000-pound dental hygienist kind of a thing?
The biggest show, I think, on TLC right now is Dr. Pimple Popper.
Oh, see, is he just pimples or does he do blackheads too?
Well, she actually just
boils carbuncles.
she pops pimples, and every once in a while, Grandpa Al Lewis stops by. See, your influence carries on today. I'm kidding.
Grandpa was on our show.
Right.
Many people died right after being on our show if they didn't die on our show.
Well, you guys had a lot of celebrities on that show. Was that something that just your producers went out and sought, or did you legitimately, did John Voight watch? Was John Voight a watcher?
Producers? What are you? We had producers, but they didn't do anything.
I see.
Because they didn't know how to produce a how-to show. So we did everything, quite frankly. We got the free trades for all the materials, and we booked the projects, and we actually went to thrift markets and flea markets and auctions to get the old furniture. We got all the guests who were not famous, like the people who were experts in various other crafts that we were not. Mm-hmm. And then after a while, we would start to call celebrities. And of course, we started at the very top. And when we got to the very bottom, they started to say yes.
Right. So you started at Pat Cooper, right?
John Voight, we met him at the Cable Ace Awards in 95, I believe. Mm-hmm. At the House of Blues, and
right.
We were nominated that year, but we didn't win. And we did some shtick at the podium, telling some jokes before we announced some people who were, you know, up for receiving Cable Ace. This was the non-televised Cable Aces,
right.
And there was a
when
guy laughing in the audience. Guy laughing in the audience who we couldn't see because the lights were so bright on us. And then we got into the elevator after the show, after the presentations, and John Voight got in the elevator with us, and he said, "Hey, you guys were great."
Of course, I said, "What kind? You must be crazy to laugh at us." And it turns out I was right. He's an insane man, but yes. We didn't know it then.
No. It was
anyway,
before
he
went.
Said, would you be on? You want to be on our show? I said, we could do a takeoff on Deliverance.
We were going to call it Furniture Deliverance. We're all in a canoe, but we also have an enormous chest of drawers. And Joe, of course, played Bert. I was going to play Ned Beatty, and I refused to sit down because, you know, it was after.
Yeah.
It didn't work out.
But it turns out when we started doing the shows that season, we sent one of our assistant producers or so. He was in Florida filming Alligator or whatever the hell that movie was.
No, Anaconda.
Anaconda.
Right.
And we sent him some text what to say, and he actually did it. So he was on our what was supposed to be our anniversary. It was supposed to be a double show. It was supposed to be an hour show, but the Learning Channel changed their minds afterwards.
Right.
Lewis, Frank Gorshin.
Frank Gorshin, yeah.
The great and the near great.
Right.
Just the great.
Joe, was the intention to make a show that was truly subversive? Because what you guys did is you actually, I mean, all joking aside, you guys deconstructed and ridiculed the how-to DIY genre while actually working inside that genre. Or was it just about the comedy, first and foremost, and then the subversive thing was kind of a side effect?
The comedy was just a matter of what makes Ed and I laugh. Yeah. It doesn't matter if other people laugh as long as we're making each other laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the work goes, the work was, we knew what we were doing, and we weren't necessarily making fun of other how-to shows, but we were actually doing the work.
Yeah.
The only other guy I knew that did the work was Roy Underhill, if you remember him.
Norm. Norm did
Norm.
Work.
Right.
Norm did Norm. Work, yeah, yeah, but he had no personality.
Right.
Everything
well,
he got is electric except his personality.
Yeah.
That was the thing when we watched the how-to shows. It didn't take a genius.
Yeah.
We would watch the cooking shows, and the cooks – had personalities. Julia Child had a personality. Graham Kerr, the Galloping Gourmet, had a personality. But no one in the how-to genre had the slightest inkling of a personality.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if we thought, the natural ebullience of a chef goes towards entertainment, and crafters are the people who hide away in their basements, tinkering. So we combined the two, and it came out whatever that was.
You know, if you're showing somebody how to do something and you're making them laugh while they're learning, it's more effective than just saying the basic technique of what you're trying to show.
Yeah, in fact.
And having no laughs, because then people fall asleep.
In fact, that's that's still lost on modern audiences and modern how-to networks. They just don't know that. That what you guys did has never been repeated, at least not that I'm aware of.
No, it hasn't.
Why don't you become our agent and we'll repeat it, Bob?
You got it. You're on.
There was a show that was made in Canada.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was called, but I was living in Canada at the time because I had a Canadian person that I was married to, this woman who's crazy. Anyway, I'm no longer married and I'm no longer in Canada, but there was a show called, I can't remember what it was called, but it was, they had the same concept. They had a set that looked exactly like ours, and what they did was they'd take find stuff in the trash that was shit and they'd make it into something else.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had no personalities whatsoever. I think they were on for 2 seasons.
Right.
I'm not going to claim that Joe and I are brilliant, well-read, and hilarious people who also have a great degree of expertise in a particular subject.
Yeah.
Except that's what it is.
Right.
But just the fact of combining expertise in a craft with wit, well, it's like, how many people are like that?
Yeah. No.
It's two really disparate talents or proclivities.
Mm-hmm.
We happen to embody both of them. And, plus I don't mind talking about them.
Well, yeah.
The record shows, too. If you look at our shows, in fact, I don't know if you've seen the new shows that we did a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah.
We filmed 6 new shows.
Yep.
Got some money and made these shows that are on the internet right now, furnitureguys.tv. And you can
see
them all on there.
It's a fabulous website.
And we took it to, extremes. So some of the shows are almost an hour. And we went to lengths to find some good projects. And we get good response. I mean, no TV network has called us, but, possibly.
That's Bob's job. Bob's going to call the TV network. Think they'd want an hour-long how-to show in the spot that Chris Matthews just vacated?
You know what? If I was in charge, I would totally do that. So, yeah, I mean, a couple of years ago, you guys made the jump over to something called YouTube.com. What made you decide to take a stab at doing an internet show?
Because it was free.
Free, yeah. Are you still making episodes of the old Furniture Guys, or is that just something that you were trying out and you're kind of waiting to see what happens, see if it catches on?
We tried it out. We're getting we get response, and maybe we'll get even more after being on your fabulous show, Robert.
Yes, there's no pressure, though. I'm not feeling the pressure yet. Let's go back to Furniture to Go real quick. I mean, Furniture on the Mend was pretty revolutionary, especially given it was PBS in Philadelphia. It was a local show, but then Furniture to Go was, as far as I'm concerned, contrasting it with Furniture on the Mend, everything was fair game in that show. Every element of the show somehow played for comedy, right?
Yeah, as we did more shows, we of course got more relaxed and decided to do more comedy, and it all worked. Where the voyeurism of the show was, people were coming into our shop and seeing what the hell we were doing. And there were a lot of crazy people out there that thought it was a real shop. They thought we actually had that shop, that we lived together. When I was walking by myself, I'd see people in Canada and in Philadelphia here. Hey, where's the other guy? Well, I killed him, I'd say.
That was my show. People thought you were sleeping in the same bed like the Three Stooges with a lion licking your toes or something like that? Is that was the
Not
internet.
Even on the road, Bob. Not even on the road.
So, I mean, did TLC even...
You know, the other thing about our show is, of course, I think the comedy was as good as anything anywhere.
Yeah.
Because we really tried.
Yeah.
And we had more money when we went to the Learning Channel, so they allowed us to do more elaborate cold opens. the set pieces that opened the show that were often movie
parodies.
Yeah, right. We had more money. We got to go more places, and so we could replicate more films.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, I think we taught more than any other how-to, because we didn't gloss over any points. Mm-hmm. We took everything, regardless of it being a repair, refinishing, or upholstery, step by step. And one of the nice things is a lot of people have contacted us over the years and said, I got into the business because I watched you. That's how I literally learned the craft that I used to make my living.
Wow.
So the learning was there, I think, better than any other how-to show. Meanwhile, the comedy was in there more than any other how-to show, yep. Partly because no other hosts on how-to had senses of humor. But the thing we always knew is that the repeated, the repetitive, the boring, the tedious parts of our craft, sanding back and forth, yep. And back and forth, or stitching one right after the other, requires no explanation after you tell people how to do it once.
Yeah.
Then it's just over and over.
Mm-hmm.
So when it has to be over and over and it's on TV, on the other shows, there's silence or horrible music.
Hey, I mean,
us, we discuss old films, The Stooges, Deepak Chopra, or whatever.
I mean, never shied away from noting that there were elves who would jump in to finish some of the projects. I mean,
Well, you need that. When you're shooting three, four shows a week,
yeah.
You need to have people there to help you too. But the projects, but in the first run, the first 14 shows we did, I think, on PBS, we did everything.
Right.
The shows were filmed in my shop.
But you would never bullshit your audience, though. And that was one of the subversive things that I'm talking about here. You would actually emphasize how the elves are going to come in. Yeah. Yeah.
It was economy. It was all because of the production schedule. Mm. We'd be shooting three shows simultaneously. So I do three staples. You'd see it on TV. I'd throw it into the other room. My assistant would work on it, doing the same thing I had showed people how to do, only 1,000 more times. While that happened, we'd bring in a mantle. Joe would start to finish it. It would go out into the hall. That would have to dry. The sofa comes back in. It was a big jigsaw puzzle.
Jesus.
And speaking of being the producers, none of the producers they actually hired knew about things like drying times or how long one repetitive step would take. So we had to schematize the entire production schedule. Mm. Yeah. That's why they gave us extra money, because they wouldn't give us a raise for being talent. They said, "But you want to be executive producers? Yeah. Well, that comes out of a different pot. We can pay you that." And I said, "Oh, is that how it works?" They said, "Yeah." I said, "So you're scumbags."
I mean, did TLC understand what you were doing? I mean, was there a struggle with network? I mean, wait, you guys aren't like Dean Johnson and or Joanne Liebler at all. Why are you not doing what Dean Johnson does? Did you ever run into that with the executives?
Well, Dean Johnson was a different kettle of fish. And they, after we did so many seasons of Furniture to Go, they wanted to change our formula. So we did home projects, the Men in Tool Belt shows, which I loathed, but we made do with them. You know, they were good shows. They were half hour shows. We did two seasons. We were supposed to do a third season. That's when they dropped the show.
Right, right.
Because they got that other show, Trading Spaces, they can get five people. You know, they could get a Chinese guy, a black guy, a fat guy, a woman, and maybe another woman, and they could pay them less than we're paying us.
Right, right.
We could play all those characters. See, that's the thing.
I look like hell in a dress.
I play a fat black Chinese woman often in my private life.
Every day.
Yeah, private life.
Every once in a while.
Rip Taylor just died this year, and in honor of the anniversary of his death, I have to tell you that I have a friend that's half black and half Japanese, and every December 7th, he attacks Pearl Bailey. Can you hear me?
Great joke.
In terms of just comedy in general, I mean, who are your biggest influences? Ed first, then Joe.
Rip Taylor. Mark Twain and Rip Taylor.
Influences are too many. I mean, I grew up, as Ed did, watching television. So, you know, we when we met, we found that we watched the same shows, knew the cast of characters. In fact, even funnier than that was the fact that our mothers, who never met, all said the same stuff to us, like growing up. Don't play with it. It'll get bigger. You had a hole in your pants.
Although your mother called you a simple bastard, and my mother called me a no good, rotten son of a bitch bastard. So, it was close.
Jesus.
Anyway, that's where comedy comes from. The families. My father was a comedian. My father was on stage. He was in show business, as was my mother. So I used to go to gigs with them when I was 7, 8 years old.
Oh, my God.
And they would play a lot of clubs. And so I would be on backstage when my dad was on stage. He used to tell jokes and he used to tap dance.
What about you, Ed? Were your parents more than just mean to you?
They loved me. They loved me. My dad was in show business too. He was a drummer until my mother said, "You quit that and get a job, goddammit." And so he did. But he kept on playing on the weekends in the music business, and he taught me how to do it too. But I gave that up because I substituted drugs at about the time other people were actually picking up musical instruments. I had already had my fill. But my mother was always on stage.
Okay, I got to jump in right here to tell you about Plexiderm. We've seen the commercials. We've heard the promises. Use this serum and it's going to do all kinds of great things to your face. But it takes months and months and months, and you may not even see the results you were expecting. Now imagine a topical solution for eliminating fine lines, wrinkles, and large under eye bags in just a matter of minutes. And I'm not talking about some risky, expensive plastic surgery or Botox or fillers or any of that crap. I'm talking about gone in minutes. It's called Plexiderm, a clinically studied serum that visibly eliminates your wrinkles, crow's feet, and under eye bags in just minutes. It's the edge you've been looking for. And you know, when Plexiderm asked me to take the test, I jumped at the chance. I wanted to see if it would work. And in just a matter of minutes, gone, poof, the fine lines around my 48-year-old eyeballs were gone. Plexiderm can give you the confidence you'll need to be yourself at work or out with friends. And the best part is, Plexiderm lasts for hours and goes on clear, so nobody's going to know that you're using it. Go to tryplexiderm.com and use my code VOICES for 50% off a full-size bottle of Plexiderm, plus an extra $10 off. That's right, 50% off, plus an extra $10 off. This offer is also available by calling 1-800-685-1292 and mentioning the code VOICES. Plexiderm is backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit triplexiderm.com today. Use the code VOICES at checkout. That's triplexiderm.com, code VOICES. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show.
I mean, from the very beginning, you both appeared as if you had been doing that for years. And it's one thing to actually banter back and forth when you're on the job or something like that, but it's a whole other talent to do that in front of cameras with microphones and a crew who's looking at their watches and waiting for lunch. Was there a huge learning curve for that? But it seems so effortless. I can't imagine that there would have been.
It was pretty effortless for us, I think. And once you got to know the crew all chimed in. A lot of the old shows, you used to hear background noise that was actually the crew saying ooh or ah, or they would make funny noises, and we would encourage that. Applause while we did something. Yeah. And they were all willing to join in.
If you watch the original PBS programs and then the TLC furniture programs, you can see that we get better, that we get looser, that we have more space. Yeah. To the credit of our producers on both of the shows, they, with very few exceptions, and we had a number of producers, with very few exceptions, everybody got it.
Yeah.
Now, whether they assigned the people who they thought would get it to us, because we met some people, certainly at the network and the PBS level, that looked at us like, you know, a Cocker Spaniel looks at you when you speak French.
Yeah.
They didn't know what the hell we were.
Yeah.
But the people who all worked with us either
got it
from the get-go or got it soon.
So there
ever said, "Are you sure? Isn't that a little too weird?" We never heard that.
You know, in fact, to this day, I still repeat. I mean, maybe once or twice a month, in fact, I still repeat a throwaway Ed line from the show. And it was this: "I was looking under the couch and I found a dust bunny the size of a peach. Then I realized it was an actual peach." I say that maybe a couple times a month. I assume all of those asides were improvised, right?
They were all improvised, yes.
I heard that joke, and I can't remember where, from a mainstream comedian, a comedian who got paid to just tell jokes. But after I had said it on the show, so I don't know if they watched the show. I don't know if we both thought of it independently, which happens all the time. But it's out there.
It's
and if you hear it, and I don't know where I heard it, but I heard it after I said it.
I mean, stuff so, like that would set the show apart. I mean, the improvised comedy, obviously the sketches too. Going back to, you know, the support from producers, support from the network, where there are a lot of battles to keep little things like that, little asides. You say, well, is that you really want to keep that in there? Or could we put something that's more informative in that place? Were you having to battle for those things?
There are only certain things, like we were doing a stain once with tobacco. Chewing tobacco. And I remember doing a take, and they said, okay, action. And I said, we're doing a stain today with this chewing tobacco, and we're going to boil it in water. And it was like, what was it called? Indian something.
Red Man.
Red Man.
And of course, there was an Indian brave on the front of the package.
Wow.
Right. And Ed said, well, I don't know. I smoke Jew Boy cigarettes. And I stopped and I said, that's it, cut. He said, what? I said, then that's never going to go through, Blarney.
Because Red Man tobacco is not right. They shouldn't have that.
Right.
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just telling you what I knew was going to happen. Instead, he said, okay, well, I smoke Oy Vey cigarettes. And that was okay.
See, not as funny. Not nearly as funny.
But. Of course not, because Jew boy is a funny term. It's not derogatory, but,
yeah.
You know, when Ed says it, I laugh.
There was Joe had made...
What?
The Kundalini.
No, you said that. That's what I was just going to tell. You used the word Kundalini. Oh, I did something that was fantastic, a finish of some... And Ed said, oh, my Kundalinis are standing on end. And this asshole at the Learning Channel, Bob something or other, can't remember his
Bill
name.
Bill Cosmas,
yeah. And it got to the point where we were actually...
He said that's dirty.
Dirty, but he didn't know what it was. So Ed and I were actually on the phone with Bill Cosmas, with a guy who was an expert at Sikh religion from India.
Yeah,
from
Sanskrit, from Penn. Now, I knew what it meant. A Kundalini is the... energy at the base of your spine. It's what you're trying to activate when you're meditating. I did
exactly.
It, but this schmuck didn't. So, and he didn't believe us. So we had to get a professor of Sanskrit from Penn, where I used to teach. And we did a conference call, and 20 minutes he convinced him. And when I hung up, I thanked the professor. I said, you know what? I'm never going to argue about anything again.
Yeah.
If I got to go through this shit and I got to get a guy with a PhD to back me up.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I keep going back to this question of any battles with the network, because TLC was not known for its comedy. So I imagine there were a lot of conference calls where the both of you are having to explain to TLC what comedy is. And
actually, no, we did not. They let us pretty much do whatever we wanted to do. There were
until what? when we got that little short guy. Will Schwartz.
Yeah, then they
made us see we were doing furniture. We're furniture experts. People pay us to do furniture. People pay us to talk about furniture. I've taught the history of furniture for a couple dozen years, and we knew the subject.
Right.
Then they said, you know what? You got to broaden your audience. I said, our ratings are great. You got to broaden your audience. You got to fix houses. And we said that everybody does that. We were the only one doing what we did. It was our thing. And the reason we went into it is everybody did houses and more people were refinishing the chest of drawers than putting the copper roof on. So it
made
sense.
They thought we were going to get a bigger audience by doing home projects, like Ed said, what everybody else was doing. So we would put in island kitchens. We would put in storm doors, all boring stuff. And they took away us doing the film parodies. They said
we can't do that anymore.
We did in response to that was, and this is also great, especially in today's world where reality TV and people, the homeowners are on camera. They used to tell us, well, we'd be doing a show in somebody's kitchen. And we'd say, well, maybe we can get the homeowner on and talk. And they said, no, well, homeowners are stiffs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? This is 1996. Homeowners are stiffs. Hmm.
Now every show are homeowners going around picking their house, right?
Yeah. So we said, okay. So in one show, Ed would be the wife and I would be the husband. And we'd dress up. Or Ed in the dress. And be talkative. You know, and that's the way we got our comedy on doing that kind of stuff.
Now, didn't they move that show? Wasn't that show on Discovery or was it on TLC its entire run? I remember
TLC.
TLC. Okay.
Well, the Discovery Network owns TLC.
Yeah.
And the other thing was around the time they finally stopped asking for us to make shows, which sounds a lot better than canning us, TLC started to change. Mm-hmm. The first thing they did was they stopped calling it the Learning Channel.
Yeah.
We were there when they did that. They did a focus group.
Wow.
By the way, the time to start shooting everybody in the meeting is when they say the words, broaden your audience or focus group. Then you should just take out the machine gun.
Yeah, there's
because
nothing worse.
Nothing good will happen after those words are spoken. So they did a focus group and they found out that the word learning is a turnoff. So they stopped using the word learning in their title, and they just went to TLC.
Yeah.
The only other example of this we have is KFC, because their focus group showed that people were intimidated by the word fried. So fried and learning are both bad things in America, apparently.
So by later episodes, and this is before Men in Tool Belts came around, but by later episodes of Furniture to Go, it really seemed to me as if you guys were aiming for more of a like a late night show. Like the ultimate goal of Furniture to Go was to evolve into something in late night. Was that a real thing, or was I just misperceiving that?
Well, in New York City, they played us at 11:30 on Saturday night, and we kept pace with Saturday Night Live in the ratings.
Mm. In fact, when they changed our show from the Furniture to Go to Men in Tool Belts, there was a while there where it was like, what would you guys like to do?
Mm-hmm.
And we said we'd like to do an hour show. And, you know, if we want to do home projects, it was a matter of going into a house and doing projects in the house, in whatever house we're in. But they were all furniture, not putting in toilets.
Right,
I did toilets when I was in my 20s doing construction.
Yeah, it sounded like Men in Tool Belts was just a soul-crushing experience. Is that a good
way to describe it? Yeah, and it was not our title either.
Yeah.
We went through, I don't know how many titles.
Right.
And the little guy that Ed talked about, Will Schwarz, who became our producer, he was the one that named it Men in Tool Belts because Men in Black had just come out.
You're right, Bob. It was soul-crushing, and it would have been all bad except for the fact that we were getting twice as much money as ever before.
Jesus.
And, of course, as with all other people on TV shows, that was our core, but the fame that came from having a TV show got us booked every weekend at home shows, which was a lot of money, a book deal, which was more money. And then we could sell the books and our T-shirts, and they're collector's items now, home shows.
You can get the Furniture Guys book for $4.39 on eBay.
So actually,
signed,
but it's out of print. It's out of print.
That makes me think, who owns the archive of all of your shows? Maybe even going back to Furniture on the Mend. So Learning Channel owns all of those shows?
Discovery Network. But they're all on YouTube, Bob. Apparently, no one cares, and that's fine.
Yeah, someone's been putting them on. You know, they show up. The Men in Tool Belt ones are showing up now. And so they're still visible, but people don't know us because we don't have a TV show that broadcasts us and to go to YouTube. But we've got a lot of hits. Yeah. On a lot of the shows.
Apparently, the Learning Channel is not as litigious as the Disney organization, so you can pretty much put our shows up anywhere and you won't get a call.
That's right. Well, it seems like you could package all of the Furniture to Go shows, especially, and do, I don't know, Blu-rays, DVDs, whatever the kids are looking at these days, streaming and all that stuff.
I put money on the fact that if they started running those shows again, they'd attain the same amount of audience as they had when we were at our prime.
Yeah, yeah.
And but people are not given that. People are force-fed the same shit, which is also one of my big peeves, the cooking shows, as Ed talked about, cooks having personality.
Yeah.
You know, now everything is a group effort. Everything has got judges. It's all bullshit.
Yeah, it's all a game show. Game show now. Yeah.
Not that we wouldn't be judges.
So, oh yeah, I'd be a judge.
Yeah, I mean, so there is this.
We pitched this show to ABC just a couple of weeks ago, Bob. It's a show where they where Joe and I have our backs to the stage. And they bring out a piece of furniture and they put it there. And then we have to guess what it is. And then later we turn around and say, shit, it's a desk.
That's right.
You know, sounds yeah. good, doesn't it?
That's right. So, I mean, there is this new breed of HGTV shows. There's the confusing twins. There's the bitterly divorced LA couple. I mean, does it pain you to see how middle of the road everything is when you guys
don't even watch it?
I mean,
not at all, because I've never seen any of these things you're talking about, Bob.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you guys proved that it could be so much more than what they're doing, and instead they've taken the safe middle of the road route with all of this stuff, the inoffensive, you know what, it's more like, it's not watchable television. What it is it's background noise when you're doing other chores, when nothing else is on, you put that on. Am I wrong about that? Are there exceptions?
No, you're completely right.
Absolutely
these
right.
Shows, they call these shows magazine shows. It's like flipping through a magazine, but you never see anybody do any work. this show called Flip This House.
Yeah.
I've seen that show. And it's got the big guy with the muscles and the beard who's like a designer. And,
that's
and
me.
They go in and they paint rooms like a red color to sell the house.
Right.
And it's so damn boring. And there's a girl on it, two girls, and they go out to flea markets and they buy crap. And it's all fake. You know, it's like they're haggling with the guy, or they're saying, oh, how much do we have to spend? Well, we only have $300. And then they talk to the owner of the piece. And then,
Joe.
And then it's like
we should just
haggling,
be pitching the shows we've been working on, Joe. Joe and I work on shows all the time. Yeah. Bob, do you watch Hunters with Al Pacino?
Yes. Yeah, I just started watching that the other day.
Well, Joe and I have this Hunter show. We search for people who have plastic slipcovers and we kill them.
See, I'm already on board. That is a show, in all seriousness, that is a show that
and
I would actively watch.
A half of them are Nazis. But just by happenstance.
That's right. You know, and it's not active viewing anymore. And you guys had active viewing in the same way. Yeah, I'd watch Furniture to Go as actively as I'd watch SNL or Letterman or anything else. And it just required effort.
Our audience reaction was like that, too. When we used to do home shows, we would have kids as young as five who came with their grandfathers who were 85. Yeah. And they both watched the show together.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was something that was... Every week, people tuned in to see what the hell we were going to do and what the hell we were going to say.
Remember when that five-year-old kid came? Remember when that five-year-old kid came up to us and said, "What schmuck thought Kundalini was dirty?"
Yeah,
remember that? Maybe he was four.
So I do. I mean, speaking of that, does anyone still come up to you and say horse har? And do you ever feel like punching them in the throat when they do? Or are you cool with it?
No.
You kind of say to yourselves, they remember.
In fact, on Facebook, when we were doing the Learning Channel shows, the Furniture to Go, and our stage manager, Miss Diane Feinberg, who was a wonderful lady. And I just got a post from her on Facebook. She's still working at NBC here, I think.
Wow.
And there was a picture of her with her headgear on, and she's standing in a studio with Gritty, the hockey, the Flyers mascot.
Oh,
Gritty,
yeah, it's terrifying.
The thing that looks like the coronavirus.
Exactly.
And she said to me, she posted the picture, and it says, he's filled with horse hair, but she said hair. So I had to write
har.
Back. That's horse har.
That's right.
That's horse har.
I almost got it trending the other day when I announced that you guys were going to be on the show. Everyone was tweeting hashtag horse har.
A lot of people say horse har to us all the time. And if Jared Kushner would say it to me, I'd punch him in the throat. But I'd punch him in the throat anyway.
That's true.
Just for good measure.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So
some people recognize. They don't recognize me as much now because I have a beard.
I could talk to you guys for another couple of hours, just like I did with Joe back in 1995. kept you on way too long. Right. So what's next for the furniture guys? What are you guys doing? And by the way, I have a $1 billion suggestion, if you don't mind. In order to appeal to modern audiences, you should each do a solo series, the Ed Show and the Joe Show, and then you team up to create the Furniture Guys extended universe. I give terrible advice, but that's kind of my idea.
No, well, now that Iron Man is dead, right? Isn't he dead? Tony Stark
is dead. He's dead. Yes, he's dead.
Can we get somebody to get Robert Downey Jr. back on drugs so we can make good movies again? Because after he sobered up, he just made cartoons. And when he was higher than shit, he did brilliant work. And you know what? True. I don't have to live next door to him.
Did you
know, just shoot him up and get him in front of a camera because he's better that way.
Did you hear about this is getting way far afield, but did you hear about the end of Doolittle with Robert Downey Jr.? This is what happens at the end of Doolittle. He confronts a dragon and the dragon is angry and in a bad mood. Turns out the dragon has an impacted colon and Robert Downey Jr. has to reach into the dragon's butthole and he starts pulling things out. Like, I think there's actual, come to think of it, I think there's actual furniture in there. And then the dragon farts, and then Robert Downey Jr. gets all the treasure. The end. And I'm not making up a word of that. That is actually...
Well, that begs the question, why didn't Eddie Murphy think of that one?
That's right. I have one last question. This is for Joe. Will breathing spit coat fumes prevent the coronavirus?
No. Okay. It will enhance it. The virus comes to you quicker.
It'll make it worse.
When you brush on spit coats. So stay away from spit coats. Well, it's like a magnet.
That's another thing Joe and I are working on, the Matt Gaetz reality program. Just follow this guy around. He's pure entertainment, ain't he?
Jesus. You know what? This has been such an honor for me. I love you guys. I love the old shows. I love the new shows. And I would love to have you on some other time very, very soon. And we can talk about more stuff. Please.
See what your ratings are now that we were on.
That's right. I'll double check.
Base it on that. If two calls come in, we're not available anymore.
And
you can contact Stan Nielsen at 555.
Speaking of that, where can people find your stuff?
Just go to furnitureguys.tv.
Furnitureguys.tv.
Joe. Here's what you can get if you go on Furniture Guys TV. Yeah. Most of our old shows are there. The new shows that we just did a year and a half ago are on there. Plus links to a podcast we did for about a year on the radio, a weekly. And so there's hours and hours of content there.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you again. And I hope to talk to you guys again real soon.
Anytime,
Bob. Call anytime.
Take care. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.